This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
With us in studio this morning from the Lane Agri Park at the Agriculture Extension Service, we have Anthony Tuggle. Anthony, how are you today?
Good morning, Scott. I am good. Glad to see some sun going to be out today.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm just glad it hasn't been as rough as it was last week.
Well, I think I saw in the news, 10 tornadoes in the state in 11 days or
and
something like that.
Flash flooding like never before. Yeah. In fact, we talked to a farmer. They had 120 cattle out in Las Casas. I'm sure you heard about that one.
Yes.
Maybe we'll get to that news story in a little while, but it was interesting. I've not heard of a flash flood that rises as quick as it did, but carrying cows some 19 miles downriver.
It's amazing, right?
And they survived. Two even went over the Walter Hill Dam. That'd be a little rough right there.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, got most all of them back. I know less than 10 he haven't received. Maybe found those by now, but it is a blessing.
Have you ever heard of such?
I have not.
Man, whenever we have storms like that, do you guys get a lot of calls? Because I'm sure people with gardens out there and stuff like that, they're curious. Is it too much water all at once? What's going to happen?
We typically don't get a lot of calls about vegetable garden, mostly trees. Especially if the trees are damaged, will they survive? Kind of really hard to tell, depending on how healthy the trees were before then and things of that nature. And do they need to cut it all the way down, to cut it back, prune it? So we got a lot of questions, mostly around trees. We did get that call. If anybody called about cows, and we know who was missing them, let them know. But most of the stuff is, I would say trees. Gardens are typically not a lot.
Okay.
We had some during the storm out in Eagleville, Rockville area. Producer had a hothouse. It was got obviously. I call him a big old kite. They just got him and just flew off. And then another one had one just moved a few feet. So it just those type calls. The ones we get. But gardens not so much. But we are in garden season though.
Yeah, definitely so. And something I've noticed. Kind of starting out this season, more bugs than usual, it seems like. I don't know if we just didn't have enough cold weather or what.
Is it more bugs or is it just the cicadas?
Maybe it's just the cicadas and makes it feel like it's a lot more.
It's a lot of them. That's just, you can hear them. They typically stay in the tree. They get out, but you go underneath the tree or something where they are, man, they are in flux. So,
I kind of forgot how loud they were all the time.
They are chirping pretty wild.
Well, the good thing about it is that they don't attack you, they don't bite you, they don't sting. So that's the positive, but man, they are irritating.
I guess I got kind of used to it. I know they're only going to be around about a few weeks. So I actually walk outside just to listen to them.
it does block out the sound of traffic. But there are a lot of them, and in some areas of the country, they've got, two different types of cicadas?
Yeah. So I think those are 13, 17. I can't remember which brood they are. But, yeah, some areas, I think Ohio, one of those areas, may have two different brood. But we're fortunate to have one. They are so interesting to me because you may be in one county. I'm going to say Rutherford. They may be in Rutherford County this year, and Wilson or Williamson County may not have them. Like last year, they were in one of the other counties. It's just amazing how they just so segregated in different areas. So it's so fascinating to me how that works. It's like they would be all out at one time.
Yeah, and it's just so odd how they go underground for, 13 years, then come up right on cue?
They're 13 or 17, yeah, it does.
That's so weird. Now, have we got the 17-year cicada? Do we have that here, too? I know not right now, but
we do.
Okay.
It's kind of a small number. I believe we do. I can't exactly remember, but I think we do have them, but they are not as bad as this brood here. I think it's more, there are a few cicadas come out every year regardless. That small numbers, people don't really notice or think about them, but they are very, very small numbers. They may come out at different times, pretty much all the time, but that's when they big influx of them doing their 13-year or 17-year.
I'm already seeing their shells everywhere. The exoskeleton. What is it? The shell of the things?
I'm still waiting on somebody to tell me, that call me and tell me that, how they taste. And I wouldn't have eaten any yet. I know we were talking about it beforehand.
You know, some countries, they do everything from, chocolate grasshoppers to fried, who knows what, ladybugs. But yeah, there's some countries where they really enjoy that stuff. Not me.
I think I'm a pass.
Pass on that one. I still question, how in the world is escargot considered some kind of glamour type food?
I'm with you. I don't understand either.
Or fish eggs. I don't want that either.
No.
So gardens, that is one of the topics that a lot of people are definitely talking about this time of year. And as far as the different seasonal fruits and vegetables to grow, what is coming up right now?
I mean, we're in peak strawberry season. You go to the farmer's market, we got tons of strawberry. We do have people that have some greenhouses, hot houses. They do have some tomatoes coming in. But a lot of our cool season vegetables, onions and things of that nature are in. But in the ground, I mean, people can really much go in and plant all their warm season vegetables now. But we quite a bit of the stuff. Mostly cool onions are big at the farmer's market. So a lot of those cool season vegetables. We have people with some greens and things of that nature. But strawberries are really in abundance.
And again, the market's every Tuesday and Friday.
So tomorrow from 7 to 12. And also, started last year, we added artisans on one side. People can they make in different things. So all kind of little placards and different types of things that they make is at the farmer's market on Fridays now as well. So
I like the farmer's market. Something about it is just relaxing. And, of course, you get fresh fruits, vegetables, and even meats.
I'm glad I was out of honey. So I was so glad it opened up last. You know, you can buy honey in the store, but it's not the same. And they don't have all the antibiotics and properties for allergies and sinus and stuff either. But I just couldn't wait to get that first my first purchase was some honey.
And you know, that it really does help with allergies. As long as you get honey, you know, within 60, 70, 80 mile radius, I guess. What is it? Is it a 100 mile radius, they say?
I don't know the rate, but I know as local, close as you can around the area with the things that are pollinating in our area, and the bees are using that pollen to make their honey, is the health benefit of that. So I was scraping the bottom of my container, so I'm back. I'm good now.
It is good stuff. What kind of meats do you see each year at the farmer's market?
We have several producers that actually have. Well, we pretty much have all the meat. We have beef, pork, lamb at the market, chicken. So in any variety, I mean, you may have some sausages, you may have bacon, steaks.
Can you tell a difference? I mean, when you buy, like, let's say, fresh cut steak at the farmer's market from an area farmer, can you personally tell a difference between that steak and one you buy at the grocery store?
Can I personally tell it?
I've always wondered that. I never knew the answer.
Maybe it's mental. I think I can have it seemed a little fresher to me.
Well, I guess it would be fresher, wouldn't it?
It ain't been as long, but yeah. But in the past, I purchased from a producer and have a cow process. So, and I didn't have a stockpile of, I eat it.
I've heard a lot of people do that.
So we do that a lot. And that's where I kind of, and everybody who purchased that did it that way always talk about how fresh the meat is and how much better the meat was than purchasing it from the grocery store. So I'm going to say, there's a difference.
And I guess cheaper too, right? Because you're buying in bulk. Basically, half of a cow or however much you're buying.
Half or a quarter, depending on what you eat. And
but yeah, you're saving money, I would say, because you're buying that large amount of it.
And I think more people started doing that because the processors have gotten extremely backed up. COVID had a big effect on that. The price of stuff was up, and people started buying and purchasing, getting more animal processing. So during COVID time, so now everyone has realized the secret to purchasing a good quality meat at a good price, and they got our processors all backed up.
And then sausage, fresh made sausage at the market. Man.
Good meat.
Nothing better, I guess. In the morning,
I hadn't had breakfast this morning, uh-huh. Scott. Now you got me hungry talking about all this meat.
Now they also have baked goods there too, right? Like homemade cookies, desserts, stuff like that.
Fried pies, yes, brownies, different grill. We have in this in the seed can to be grown. We have a lot of breads. I am a big fan of getting some fresh sourdough bread and just kind of eat it with some pesto, kind of be my little snack around the office.
That does sound good. And then in addition to those items, now what types of crafts or you know, miscellaneous merchandise do you find?
Oh man, they making there are chairs over there, people making bookmarkers, clothing. You get different types of hat. I don't even know where to start on that area. So many different things over there.
By the way, folks can text us any questions they may have. Again, text us any questions you may have to 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. Now, the cool thing, and this is one of those items that a lot of people like about the farmer's market at the Lane Agri Park, is the fact that you can actually talk to the farmer, find out maybe what types of pesticides they've used, if any, but you can learn more about the products you're eating.
I think that's the great thing about a farmer's market is, like you're right, Scott, is that you have that interaction with the producer and you get a good develop.
Speaking of allergies and stuff.
I know, right? Excuse me. And you develop a relationship with that producer and what you know. And what you know is a lot of that once you develop that relationship, is that a lot of people continue to go back to that same. You know, there are a lot of other producers at the market. They continue to buy from that same producer a lot. I mean, there are some may buy only tomatoes from you, may buy peppers from me, or buy something else. They are very consistent in their purchasing. They buy the same thing because they've kind of developed their relationship on that particular product.
And then the extension service, they make sure that those who are selling at the market, that they are actually local within, Middle Tennessee, this whole area, but they make sure they are local.
Yeah, we are. We try to get out and go and visit all the ones that sell at our market. But the good thing about them is that they have to be local, and they have to get their extension agent in whichever county around Middle Tennessee to certify that they are in their county and growing those products. So it's kind of a joint venture with all of our county extension agents around the Middle Tennessee area. So they have to go in and get that form signed and verify that they're in that county growing a particular product.
And that's a good thing because, of course, you're supporting local jobs. You're supporting the local farmers that bring you the produce and raise it each year. But that is a positive that you don't get elsewhere. Like if you see somebody on the side of the road selling grapefruit or something, there's no telling where it came from.
Correct. And I'm going to say we consider ourselves urban. And one of the things a lot of the urban counties or suburban counties do, we have something we call rural urban independency, where the rural areas really are independent and support those kind of suburban areas. We are losing a lot of farmland, not growing a lot, but those rural areas are still growing. So they're independent of one another. People don't think really realize how these communities are all tied and how the resources from one community really help benefit the suburban and urban areas.
Yeah, the out in the country is getting smaller and smaller, isn't it, as we continue to grow.
We're moving out.
And I can't imagine what it's going to be like, let's say 10, 20 years from now. I mean, because we're seeing so many new neighborhoods pop up in places like Eagleville, Rockville, and Christiana. So there is going to come a time, I guess, where there's not really hardly any family farms anymore.
Well, I think overall the number of family farms are growing, but the size are decreasing. I think we see more and more farms, but they just are smaller in number. So people are really interested in growing
kind of like micro farmers.
I'm gonna call them. I hate to use this term, but a lot of people, and we get this question a lot about homesteading. How can I grow and provide everything I need for my family on my small, I'm gonna say 5 acres. So we see a lot of that, and that's one something we're working on for education as well. We do a lot of beginner farmer educational program. We have people come in and move in here, but never grown anything in their life, and buy 5 acres and want to learn how to grow or what to grow. So we do a beginner farmer program, and also we are working on putting some demonstrations out. Like now we have some people who've never gardened. Mitchell and Justin doing a program where they talk to education session, and the participants are actually growing a garden on our site, a little small garden. So they hands-on, learn it and apply it real easy. So we'll continue to do more and more demonstration like that on site at the farmer market at Langhagen Park. And Rebecca's doing the same thing with some of the forage, you know, different types of forages and things like that.
So
and fencing. So they got an opportunity to put in different types of fencing for people who have livestock or different type of cattle.
When you talk to people who are maybe starting that garden for the first time, are you seeing mainly like younger families who are wanting to learn, or are they older retired folks?
It's kind of a combination. We have a lot of people that have retired, seem like from California or Colorado, so are the big numbers.
I've noticed, yeah, we're getting a lot of people from those areas, and you know, some of them are coming here for jobs, some to retire, but it is a lot cheaper to live here than California.
I remember years ago, we had an influx from Florida, but now it seems to be from out west. California, Colorado, seemed to.
A ton from out west, yeah.
And we've had them in our Master Gardener program the last few years as well. But yeah, but they for age-wise, it varies, I think.
All over the map, then?
All over the map.
How many vendors do you guys allow at the farmer's market?
That's a good question. I don't know. I can't remember how many spaces we have on the large side, because we've kind of closed the small side off for the artisan group. During peak season, we were typically full, and I call peak season when the time we start getting all the warm season vegetables, especially when corn, watermelons, and all those types of things coming in. So.
And again, our number 615-893-1450. Had a question from a listener here, and I know we've answered this before, but let's try it again. The person is asking, do you accept debit cards or credit cards at the farmer's market?
We do. We do them two different ways. Some of our vendors accept them direct. And then we also have what we call you can purchase tokens. I say purchase, you basically swipe your card and get tokens, and all our vendors accept those tokens. The tokens are pretty much cash. So we do it in two different forms. So yes.
Okay, so definitely do accept that. And then I know there is, what, a certain time of the season where you take EBT cards as well?
We take them all year.
Oh, okay, all year, year round. Okay.
We take them all year, and they also, that process is like tokens. There are tokens as well. You come in, swipe your card, and get tokens, and then you purchase the product. Because all we do the token process, because all vendors, well, pretty much none of our vendors can accept EBT. We had to be certain things you can buy, so we had to be able to.
I'm thinking back.
It's food, so you buy tokens to do it. So you can do it, yes.
Now, wasn't there a time period where at first y'all did not accept the EBT card, didn't have the system in place or something, but then that was added, a couple years ago?
We've been doing it probably before COVID now, I don't think. We've been doing it quite a few years.
And, you know, that I'm sure helps out a lot of families for sure. And man, the cost of everything, cost of living today is so much more than what it used to be.
It is, and it's good to come to a farmer's market or either grow, especially some things you can grow, some of your fruits and vegetables will help reduce your food costs. It's a lot easier. And that way you can expand your foods, your fund somewhere else, some things you don't have to buy if you can actually grow it yourself or buy them for a really low cost like at a farmer's market.
Now, I know a couple of years back there was a new thing that caught on, and that was you buy some type of a share program into fresh fruits and vegetables, and I think you got something different, a basket full each week or something?
Thank you. CSA, community-sponsored agriculture. I don't know, there are still some CSA. I don't know if anyone is out marketed is doing a full CSA. I think that we have some of our meat producers may do some of that where they can get different meats, a certain amount of meats each week. But yeah, CSA is good. If you can find a good CSA, the way you buy into it, and then you get a variety of vegetables each week. And a lot of them, CSAs now, have partnered with some of the meat growers, livestock growers that sells meat, and then they get some meat as well as vegetables in there. I've seen some of those come up quite a bit.
Again, Anthony Tuggle with us this morning from the Lane Agri Park. He's with the Agriculture Extension Service. And what are some other things that folks are thinking about or maybe focusing on when it comes to their lawn this year?
Well, they like my yard. Hard to get out to mow with all the fine time when you have to try to get out to mow it. But weeds, we have quite a bit of people calling about weed control with all the rain we had. And not only your grass is growing, the weeds are growing. And you have to get out and try to control some of those henbit dead nettles. Some of those broadleaf weeds are still there. Wanted to know when is a good opportunity, which is now, to put out, if you hadn't put out crabgrass preventer or weed preventer for some of those grassy weeds. So weed control, mowing, and also trying to put a pre-merge out are the big things. We have some people calling still interested in overseeding some warm season grasses for Bermuda azores or some of that. But really, the big thing is weed control. It's a big one because tall fescues are growing, looking great with the weather we've had and all the rain. Warm season grasses are looking great. So mowing is the biggest thing, and basically weed control it's the two biggest thing for lawn care.
Had another question here. Again, our number is 615-893-1450. It said, or the question says, I was bathing my dogs last night and noticed they both have a whole lot of fleas. Is there anything that the Agriculture Extension Service recommends for getting rid of those fleas?
I own a pet. Not real sure. I would confer with your veterinarian, but for spraying your yard and things like that, I probably use Malathion. But like I said, you have to spray your yard with something like that. But again, right now with all the rain we have, and it's not going to be really super effective, because today, the only day you can be a chance to spray, you will get some kill on it, on some of the ones that come in contact with, and then it's going to rain.
Now, overall, if you maintain your lawn properly and mow it, you know, religiously every single week at the same height, you're going to have less problems, I guess, with all critters of every type.
You should. But then you have wildlife that come through your yard.
Oh, yes.
That drops off ticks and fleas and things of that nature. I see turkeys every morning.
I've seen a lot more.
I see turkeys in my yard.
Their population's growing or something.
So they are bringing in different types of fleas and ticks and things like that as well. So you can mow it, and it will help minimize also regular yard maintenance, but help minimize a lot. But when you got animals and things like that coming through your landscape, then it's going to be a little bit difficult.
I've seen more vultures also this year. In fact, we had one sitting in the parking lot in front of the radio station of all places, just out there by himself.
Wow. A loner, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. But it seems like there's more and more of those every single year.
Yeah, I mean, they can cause some issues for some of the livestock, especially if you have young calves that are being born. They can do some damage. But yeah, their numbers are increasing. They find roadkill on the side of the road, and they barely fly out the way when you come.
You're right. Yeah, it's like they're in slow
motion. They want you to go around them, I guess, so they don't want you to be disturbed.
Big slow motion birds. That's exactly what they are. Again, you're tuned to WGNS. Time right now, 8:41. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. Now, during the break, feel free to text any questions in 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. 205-893-1450, and we'll try to get to your question in just a second. And also, coming up in a few minutes, I'm going to try to find that news story we did about the cows that floated down river, some 19 miles, because that is a very odd agriculture-related story that you never hear about. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, and streaming at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, this is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. We have all the items needed to spoil your pet, toys, food, treats, and more. Whether you're a new pet parent or a very experienced one, you'll find the items and help you need here at Animal City. We are proud and thankful to be celebrating our 33rd year in the Murfreesboro community. That's Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro. Please check out our Facebook page.
Hi, this is Peter Demas. One of the things that we've done years ago is we've been able to do our orders, like our pastas and many other items, that we used to be able to put them in large pans, and now we have a catering team that will even deliver it to your home. We can drop it off for you, set it up, or they can come in and pick it up. Look up our catering menu on www.demasrestaurants.com. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, and streaming at WGNSradio.com.
Anthony Tuggle, our guest today from the Agriculture Extension Service. And if you have any lawn-related questions, you can text those in right now. 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. Well, grass, I know we talked a little bit about the need to mow and mow often, but grass is something that I think a lot of people, maybe they just don't know what level to cut it on. Because we've talked about this before, if you cut it too low, which you're thinking, well, I'm going to cut it low so I don't have to mow it as much, it actually hurts it and makes it look pretty rough and probably leads to you having to cut it more.
Yeah, when you scalp your lawn, you think about when you're also scalping the roots. I like to kind of tell people, you know, especially with tall fescue, you want to keep it at really 4 inches, 3.5 to 4 inches height. Bermuda and Zorgia, you can cut anywhere from an inch to an inch and a half. I kind of keep my Zorgia about 2 inches. I like it a little thick, and kind of it also, I think it helped with the look a little bit. Especially you can keep it cut regularly, but yeah, that mowing height is very important. Also, you make sure you soil testing for everything, really, and so you know what nutrients that are present and know how much nutrients you want to put down or needed for that particular crop, whether I'm calling a crop grass or crops as well, or trees and shrubs.
So locally, you know, throughout Rutherford County, is Kentucky fescue what I guess most contractors and homeowners use? Is it, I get one of the cheapest?
I'm not sure about the cheapest. Probably one of the cheapest, but it's the number one grass, I would say, in our area. And we have people that begin to like, well, I don't know if they like it there. Sometimes you have a combination of Bermuda and then hard to control to get it out. And they'll conventionally get tired of trying to deal with it and convert over. And then you have people like me to move in from Mississippi. That's all we ever had was a warm season grass and love it. So I
guess what, Kentucky fescue, you said about 4 inches is where you should be cutting?
Yeah, 3.5, 4 inches in height, yeah.
Okay, and then Bermuda?
I'm no more, no taller than 2 inches, inch and a half, 2 inches.
Is that what the golf courses use? What do they use?
Well, it depends. They have a combination, depending on what golf course. I mean, they can have tall fescue fairways, Bermuda fairways, bent grad greens, Zoysia. So they depend. They can use a combination of different grass. And they make a variance between different holes as well, so it's various.
You know, it's hard to keep the perfect looking lawn, but if you mow properly at the right level, that's a good start. And then making sure nobody drives into your yard, that's the other big thing.
Yeah, I think if you have a well-maintained yard, I think people will have a tendency not to drive into it.
You know, but I see people, we'll have somebody over or something, and they back right into the lawn to turn around. I'm like, what are you doing, man?
Maybe.
I just get anal about that. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, maintaining your lawn to make it look perfect, I guess what? The first thing you got to do is make sure you get rid of all the weeds, and then height of cutting. Those are big things.
Regular mowing. Like me, I like my yard well maintained. I have a Georgia lawn. During peak summertime, I mow it twice a week. I wanted to keep that, maintain that look. Yeah, I know it's a lot of work, but it's mow it twice a week and look like it never needs cutting, and it always looks great.
I'm sure a lot of people right now are focusing on their landscaping, and part of that means, you know, using the hedge trimmers, making sure all the bushes look exactly how you want them, and then also getting rid of those dead, you know, the twigs and stuff from the bushes, and you need to actually cut the dead tree limbs and everything off, right?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, it best, I mean, if the limbs and branches are dead, we've had 2 years of really hard winter, cold, freezing weather. Did that cause some dieback? Yes. But also I'm noting, especially on crepe myrtles, that they not only that they have a lot of, especially have a lot of dieback in the limb. If you look down close to the ground level on the ones that I've seen so far this year, they've had some canker issues, and so in the base of the tree, if starting to die back, then obviously I think those trees are eventually going to continue to decline and die back. But a lot of that can be from some mechanical hitting the base of the tree, weed eater, or either weather that's causing the crack. But a lot of them I've noticed that had, especially the crepe myrtle for sure, that had a lot of dead wood in it, they mostly have some type of canker issue, which basically there's no cure for it. So you're going to probably eventually start losing that tree if you hadn't lost it already. And it can be side by, what I've noticed, you may have three crepe myrtles. One has that issue, and they all side by side, or either two of them. It's interesting. Typically, there's nothing we can do about it except for remove them.
So we would have to literally remove the bush or the tree and put a new one in its place? That best way to do it, I guess?
Probably so. I mean, some people have asked, and I kind of recommend that they want to wait just to, because typically you will get some, what I call the water sprout, some branches stuff shoot up from there. To try to get one of those and train one of those up is an option as well. And they typically grow fast and kind of, so we see how people are doing that as well. So there are some options. You don't want to remove the whole tree. Just take it out and use some of the little water sprouts to come up and train it to be your new tree.
Had another question here. The person's asking, they said, in my landscaping, I've got a tree that's grown too tall for the actual landscaping, and it looks kind of odd. Would it be safe to cut off the top portion of the tree and trim it upwards, or would that automatically kill the tree?
Well, I thought they were going to ask about topping. So, no, you don't want to top it. But you get a certified arborist or a good tree company, they can come in and bring that tree down where it can continue to keep that same shape and form versus topping. But so, yes, you can bring it down, but it really takes a skilled person to really go ahead. But if you go in and have someone to come in and top it, then, yeah, you're going to pretty much cause some damage. And also weak limbs and branches to that tree that going to probably be worse than the tree being taller now. But, yeah, I would get a good tree company that has an arborist, someone who know how to prune and bring the canopy of the tree down altogether versus topping.
So simply shaping the tree with hedge trimmers and cutting off the extra twigs, make it look more shapely, that's okay. But when you get to that point of cutting off the top of the tree, that's where it probably could eventually kill the tree, right?
When you say leaving a form or a shape, I'm thinking more of shrubbery.
Yeah, I guess it depends what you're talking about there.
Shrubbery, yeah, shrubbery, they should be fine to doing that. But when we think about a tree, I'm thinking about a large tree or something like that. You're talking about topping it, then you're causing some major damage. You have a lot of limbs and branches because the tree go through a process called compartmentalization, and then when you top it, it's just going to, over time, it's going to continue to decline. It's going to put on a lot of water sprouts and things, but it's going to, over time, it's going to continue to start to decline from there. You're going to have to continue to go in and cut those water sprouts out, and those are very weak. Then those water sprouts, the way they are attached, are weaker than the true limbs and branches that was originally up there. So
I got you. Again, Anthony Tuggle with us this morning from the Lane Agri Park, the Agriculture Extension Service. I had another question here. Somebody asking about their rose bush. It says, I've got a lot of dead twigs on my rose bush. Can I go ahead and cut all those off? Because I've only noticed a few roses actually blooming. So roses, I guess, are already blooming, aren't they?
It depends what kind. I hadn't seen many of them. I don't think I've seen any bloom.
Should I cut it yet? Then?
If you have some dead, any kind, if you have any dead limbs and branches, I would go ahead and just prune those back out, cut them out. If it's too severe, then because they could get a disease called rose rosette over time. They could start to decline. They could have some insects last year that caused some limbs and branches to decline as well or die back.
So no matter what you're doing, just be careful.
Yeah, I would just kind of go in and just kind of look, edit and see. But if anybody they want to just email me some pictures, they can do that, and I can probably give them a better idea on what's going on with that plant.
Had another question here also about landscaping, asking if it's okay to simply put mulch over mulch, because it says we've done that every single year for at least the last 10 years. A lot of people do that, don't they? But yeah, can you put mulch over mulch in your landscaping? What kind of harm could be cause, or what could happen if you keep doing mulch over mulch?
Well, you can. I do it every year, but I only put you don't want no more than 3 inches of mulch total over around your trees or either your landscape. So if you just add in, because they're going to decompose so much. So really long, you're not adding no more than, I'm going to say three and a half inches of mulch. You can. I just typically just go in and put a little bit over mine each year. And I have less than 3 inches of mulch total.
And I guess what?
But those volcano mounds of mulch, what you want to avoid.
Yeah, that would be rough.
So, but yeah, as long as you're not putting more than 3 and a half inches of mulch, like if you add a new mulch, you should be fine.
And I always get the same type of mulch every single year, so it kind of blends in better. But I get the mini pine nuggets or pine bark.
Pine bark.
It seems to cover a larger area.
It lasts longer, too.
It does. Definitely. Yeah.
It does last longer.
When you start getting that stuff that's dyed certain colors, I don't know, I guess it's dyed, like you'll see the red mulch, that color doesn't hold for long, right?
Usually about a season. It declines as well. I don't know the process how they do that, but they are, I like the with that midnight mulch. Well, put it with my wife, like it better than I do. I wanted pine needles because it lasts longer, but I got outvoted.
I like the pine needle look, but the reason why I've never put that down is because I always fear it's going to just blow away because it looks so light.
Well, once it gets there, it stays there quite a bit. It does. It will be there.
Now, is that those little pine needles, are they more expensive than regular mulch? Do you have to get more than regular mulch?
I think they may be a little cheaper.
Oh, not bad.
think they may be. That's probably why I wanted that route, knowing me. So
I typically try to do the cheapest route myself. Here's another question again. Our number 615-893-1450. Probably the last question we can fit in here now. It says that I sometimes hear stories about mulch catching on fire. Is it the mulch catching on fire, or is it something else that catches on fire? I think I know what they're talking about, but I don't. Because every once in a while you'll drive past a landscaping truck and you'll see what looks like the mulch starting to smoke. What is that?
Well, it can catch it. Well, it is smoking. That's part of the decomposition process, decomposing process. As it decomposes, it heats up.
Ah.
So, but typically in a yard, you're not putting no more than 3.5 inches of mulch around your landscape. You should be fine. Typically it's really fresh mulch that actually would, if you bind mulch somewhere, then it should have already done all that, some of the decomposing process. But if you could buy really fresh mulch, or like you see someone, they're clearing trees out and they've actually piled it up, that's real fresh, a lot of nitrogen, so it's going to smoke, and that was particularly ones that are really possibly catch a fire, but it will heat up. So during that decomposition process, it heats up, so it will have a tendency to smoke.
Hmm. And some mulch smells a lot worse than other mulch.
It does. You can tell when you go to an area, like, oh, they just put out mulch.
Yeah, that's pretty fresh right there. And as we close out this morning, once more, the farmer's market, that is every Tuesday and Friday at the Lane Agri Park.
Yeah, they can come by and visit the farmer's market, buy some good fruits and vegetables, meats, crafts, and also look at some of our demonstration sites. We have a lot of demonstrations on site for education purposes. Our master gardeners on site answering questions and doing different things as well. So come by and visit.
And there's always stuff going on at those, the big pavilion there at the Lane Agri Park. I think this weekend there's some kind of cheesecake festival of some sorts, but y'all always have stuff going on because y'all rent that facility out, right?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, we don't have it going. There's a lot of things going. Because people always call us, what about this? And a lot of time we don't know. We just renting the facility out and there's something going on. So we have to, we probably start getting details about what they're having so we can answer those questions a bit better.
But yeah, it does seem like there's always something going on, which is cool.
It is. It's a very busy place.
It sure is. Well, as we close this morning, we'll close with that news story about the escaped cows. But Anthony, thank you for joining us today.
I enjoyed it, Scott. Have a great day.
You too. Right now, that time, 8:59. You're tuned to WGNS. We're right up against the 9 o'clock hour. And once more, this is WGNS Murfreesboro. And coming up next, we'll take a look at the news story regarding the cows that floated away.
We invite you to a special concert this Sunday at Oakland's Mansion. The Tennessee Valley Winds, a volunteer wind ensemble in Middle Tennessee, will perform at 5 p.m. This concert's brought to you by Shell Brothers Homes.
We create happy homeowners at Shell Brothers Homes.
The concert this Sunday at Oakland's Mansion features music from Les Miserables, Harry Potter, Glenn Miller, and more. Learn more about the Tennessee Valley Winds performing this Sunday at Oakland's Mansion by visiting tmvalleywinds.org.
A large number of cows were swept away by floodwaters just last week in Rutherford County. Some of the cows were carried 19 miles down Bradley Creek and into Stones River. With more on this story, here's Scott Walker.
We're now gaining a better understanding of how unusual the flash flooding was that impacted multiple areas of Middle Tennessee just last week.
It's definitely been higher than it was, but it's never risen to the level it was as fast as it did. It rose like 6 feet in 5 minutes.
Laura Vault told WGNS that her family has farmed in the Las Casas community for decades, but has never seen Bradley Creek rise as fast as it did. Cattle on the Vault Farm, which is in the heart of Las Casas, near the intersection of Browns Mill Road and Highway 96, were standing next to Bradley Creek 1 minute on Thursday.
Thursday morning, the water was not out of the bank of the creek.
And about 15 minutes later, the scenario changed, and Laura's dad, Mike, got a phone call from a friend telling him
there were cows in the water going under the bridge.
Cattle, some weighing almost 300 pounds more than a large Honda Goldwing motorcycle, were being swept away in the creek that they were previously able to wade through. The sheer number of cows and calves that encountered the fast-flowing water in Las Casas is surprising.
There were 120 in that group. It's a mix of mama cows and calves. So 64 mama cows and the rest were calves. And when I say calves, I'm talking 300 to 500 pounds. But they're not newborns.
Out of Vault's 120 cows, around 100 of them were carried away at least some distance in the fast-rising water. Cows, several weighing more than 1,000 pounds, are not exactly agile animals known to go for long swims. But that's exactly what happened. Laura's first confirmation of the cow's journey involved someone spotting two cows rolling over the Walter Hill Dam.
They saw two cows go over the Walter Hill Dam. And at that point, we thought, there's no way those are dead.
For the cows to reach the Walter Hill Dam, they had to float 9 miles down Bradley Creek, swim past the rear of the York VA Medical Center.
Someone from County Fire and Rescue told us he saw a video of four cows floating in the river behind the VA.
And into the East Fork of the Stones River. From there, the bovine traveled another 2 miles to reach the dam, which added up to an 11-mile trek. Once at the Walter Hill Dam, one of the cows managed to escape the waterway, pull itself up an embankment, and then muster up enough energy to walk across Highway 231 North.
Someone found one on Central Valley Road, and that really confirmed us that these were dead cows that went over the dam, that the Walter Hill area and beyond is where we need to be looking.
The meandering cow was then located this past Friday on Central Valley Road. The search for Vault's cows, which started this past Thursday, continued into Saturday, where 19 miles later...
And then on Saturday morning, we had several calls that there were two on 840. Sure enough, we went out there, and it was the westbound entrance ramp, 840 in Jackson Pike. They would have traveled about 19 river miles.
The Vault family says that in over four decades of farming, they have never witnessed a flash flood rise so quickly, nor have they ever seen their cows carried 19 miles away by water. All in all, about 100 cows were carried away by Bradley Creek, with some making their way into the Stones River and later on to Interstate 840. Initially fearing the worst, Vault was astonished to hear the calls of surviving cows throughout the days that followed the flash floods. And as of this morning,
we have recovered all 64 mama cows. We are still missing 7 or 8 calves.
The calves are several months old and already weigh between 300 and 500 pounds each.
As of Thursday, nearly all the cows are accounted for, and they're alive and well. And surprisingly, many of the mama cows that were found were confirmed to be pregnant.